Welcome to The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This weekly public affairs program features dialogue and community engagement with leaders and organizations making a difference in the areas we serve.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And we have done a series of COVID-19 stories starting in March when the shutdown began. And this week, as we get ready to end the year, I ask Reverend T. Renee Crutcher to join us because I wanted to talk about having faith in the valley. You know, this year has been anything but normal, and many of us have felt overwhelmed, even depressed. And I wanted to talk about how we keep the faith, and I ask Reverend Crutcher to please take on this challenge, and I want to welcome you back to The Local Take.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And, you know, Renee, before we get started, how have you and your family fared during the pandemic?
Well, I think probably much like everyone else, certainly with a little fear and trembling because this pandemic and its erratic behavior and how quickly you can get it is just simply frightening. So we've hunkered down over here. I'm a full-time caregiver of my mom, and as well as trying to, you know, do career things, that kind of thing. So with her being 86 with considerable health challenges, I've certainly had to be much more mindful of, you know, how I exist, because naturally it definitely impacts her. And so much like everyone else, just trying to be safe, trying to be careful, and experiencing, you know, death of loved ones and the kind of isolation you feel when you have a an active social life and not being able to embrace the people you love or just get out and about the way you want to. So, but I won't complain because we've been very, very blessed. So far, we've been safe. And so far, we have had people who have been so kind, knowing our situation, and they have just been very assistive to us to run errands or do those kind of things before I felt comfortable really getting out and doing some of that myself.
Well,
thanks for asking.
No, and it has been a challenging year, you know, but kind of a changing year. You know, we were initially on a, you know, forced lockdown with, you know, curfews, and we opened up a little bit, and then we're locking down again in certain places.
Right.
So it has been just an amazing year. And, you know, I've always been aware when I'm getting ready to fall off the edge, you know, and I know the things that I need to do, you know, to center myself. And most often when I feel those feelings, you know, I take that 2 mile walk, or, you know, I do a little meditation exercise, or I go to, you know, hot yoga for a certain number of days, you know, to get back centered. And a lot of those things we can't do. You know, I haven't been able to go to a hot yoga class. I've done some things virtually. But even now at the end of the year, kind of when I know I need to take that walk, when I'm, you know, shouting at the television, and I can't, you know, I just kind of can't get myself to go, you know, what do we need to do? How can we embrace our humanity, but somehow cut off that voice that says, you know, this is too much. You should just give up. Sit on the couch today. And, you know, sitting on the couch one day is fine. But when you listen to that voice and you sit on the couch for 3 days or 4 days, you know, how can we... How do we shut off that voice? How do we keep moving forward?
I think in reality, we in America suffer from what I think I saw someone refer to it as this capitalistic guilt. We feel that we have to be in constant motion all the time for some reason, that our notion of productivity is physically doing something that creates a particular type of response. you know, a kind of thing where we don't feel as if we are successful. We don't feel that we are being, we have a different way in America that I don't think is healthy. And I think this pandemic has sort of blown the lid off of that, how we function, how we see success, how we see our days as having to move. You know, it must deliver something for us. We don't look at rest as really being productive. We judge ourselves if we sit on a couch 2 days. You may need 2 days. You may need a week. I think what you're referring to, however, is not allowing ourselves to move into such a depressive state that we can't get out of. But here's the reality on that. A pandemic and being shut off and being a little afraid of things, and we've been living in a political climate in our nation that has been certainly the strangest experience that we've probably have had as an entire nation in a long time. Certainly, you know, people may have different political views, but we've been just in a plain upheaval in our nation. So you couple that with poor mismanagement of something that's very frightening, and you think about all of the responsibilities that you have to manage, it is depressive. It is an adjustment, and sometimes you need to just take the time to recognize that and be honest about it. There is no guilt to be had about feeling a little down, about feeling a little tired, about wanting to rest and do nothing and kind of wallow in it for a minute. I don't know that any psychologist would, I'm not a psychologist, but I don't know that that's not normal. That's just so human. It's just so human. And I like to look at things as there is no place from which there is no advantage. Now, certainly when you're talking about tragic situations, it's very hard to look at anything from in that light. But we have seen people, even in this pandemic, who have suffered the death of loved ones, take on a spirit of being able to grieve with care, you know, with the care of others, of warning people that this is very serious, that this is something that we cannot take lightly. All of that is there is something positive to that. I do not want to mistake that, you know, however, and say that is in the place of someone's grief, that somehow conquers anybody's grief. But I think just with what you're saying, it's okay. Give ourselves permission to be out of sorts, because when you face how you feel, when you face that you may be a little angry about it, you may be a little down in some ways, you may feel inconvenienced, you may feel any of that, you're just honoring something that's very legitimate. You can't pretend that you're something else. I think what we have to do is to begin to, I found myself concentrating on my blessings, on being grateful. And I started, believe it or not, a gratitude journal in this process so that I could get up and think about that it is allowing me, I'm so busy taking care of mommy, even though we do spend a lot of good time together. I'm so busy taking care of her sometimes that I don't always just sit and just talk with her. I am in constant multitasking mode. And then when you take time to look and see, sometimes you realize you haven't multitasked as well as you thought that you had. You know, but we're so busy in our nation thinking that working ourselves to the bone, we call people strong who carry unnecessary loads of things. And we wonder why our cancer rates, our cardiovascular disease rate, our obesity rates, all of these things that have created comorbidities that have actually been problematic for this pandemic, even they begin to show up because we don't take the time to honor our real feelings, to make that okay, to take time to rest and to deal with those feelings, to wrestle with those feelings, and to find positive ways of dealing with it. We honor ourselves for being able to do hot yoga and do the this and do the that and do 20,000 things in a day. But they sometimes counterbalance. So I think if this has allowed us to sit back in the midst and say, how are we really juggling our lives? What do we really do to be present in the moment? You know, I've heard people say that they've spent more time with their families. They've had more meals together. So I think you have to, each person has to, or each family has to find ways that lift their spirit, you know, and you've got to be creative. It's allowed us to have imagination. Certainly the virtual thing is tedious, constantly having to engage virtually. So it's also let us know that those things that we have considered to be not only just status symbols, but make us feel a little smarter than anything because we've somehow conquered time or conquered convenience, has really shown us that it doesn't really provide us with the spiritual undergirding or the spiritual support that we think. It really becomes too much. It's overstimulating, you know, in many respects. So I think considering, and I know I'm kind of going on,
but no, considering
how we rest, considering how we rest, considering, you know, taking time to work a puzzle or clean out a closet or talk to someone that you haven't talked to, friends that you haven't spoken with in a long time. Thank goodness that we do have the kind of technology that provides us with FaceTime or the kind of social media responses that allows us to listen to things more intently. You know, when you think about it, it has allowed me to really take inventory of the little things that I don't think so much about and pay attention to. You know, the season's changing. Like you were saying, you know, you get cabin fever. So a nice walk, a brisk walk in the neighborhood in a social distancing way. And I do think that that's how we began to sort of make ourselves okay in the midst of this while we wait it out.
This is Kiplin Primus. You're listening to The Local Take, and we're talking with Reverend T. Renee Crutcher about having faith in the valley. You know, I'm thinking back to April when I kind of made my pandemic list, and it was, you know, cleaning out the dining room, cleaning out this closet, and I did make the effort, and I did make, you know, dents into a lot of the things that were on that list, but it wasn't like, you know, summer goals where I'm checking them off every week. It was, you know, and mm-hmm. I still haven't checked off anything completely. And, you know, you can get frustrated with yourself, but I like what you said, that sometimes, you know, being still and sitting on the couch a day might be productive. We might need to change the way we consider what is productive.
Doing nothing is actually quite productive. Your body just stopping. You know, of course, my occupational habit comes with quoting scripture and out of the canon. You know, that scripture says, be still and know that I am God. Being still and being aware of your surroundings and thinking and letting your mind just, you know, wander in beautiful places, and even in the places that you need to clear the cobwebs of your mind, just stopping to just, you know, look at a movie, not feeling pressed that you've got to do something in a particular time frame. To be honest with you, you asked me how I'm doing. My mother's it was stressful. My mother had to be hospitalized, and my entire goal through this thing, it was to just make sure that in no way she had to go to the emergency room, that we were doing televisits, and, you know, of course we had to stop important therapies that really helped her health-wise. And so ultimately having to do that impacted her in such a way that ultimately we ended up in the emergency room ended up in the hospital for a week. I was very blessed that they allowed me, that Emory allowed me to stay with her the entire week. But of course, she was not COVID positive, so that was allowed. But I had to go through quite a bit for that to happen. But in doing that, that was such a stressful kind of thing. I was so busy trying to do that, that ultimately, you know, there were little things that I missed that might have helped. I don't want to blame myself because I think that that's a little much and that that's not the case in terms of her health conditions. But I realized even in the hospital, because I could not run and come back, because that would have been putting someone else in danger and putting her in danger, being out and about in that space, that I stayed in that hospital room. And fortunately, we were in a new part of the wing. I mean, new part of the hospital, or remodeled part of the hospital. It was very big and it was very spacious and had a, believe it or not, a spa-like quality to it. So it was a very pleasant space to be in, and it had a healing kind of quality. And they're developing a new culture at Emory Midtown, thank God. But, you know, so it allowed me to attend to her and to recognize I couldn't run and do things. I couldn't take care of these little matters. I didn't spend a lot of time on social media. I did not do anything but just be. And I was with her. And I took out this, you know, walked to the gift shop, got a journal, and decided to just start thinking about what I'm grateful for. And taking the time to say, in the years that my mom and I might have together, what would I want those years to look like? And I didn't press myself to have to try to write in it every morning or write in it at 7 o'clock and then take care of business the rest of the day. I just stopped life for a minute. I just stopped because I did not know in that moment whether or not my mother would go home with me. And none of us knows the day nor the hour. But I didn't realize, so I thought, in this time, let me make sure that whatever can be done in this moment, I'm a part of her healing process. They allowed me to stay, so I need to be very present. And I did that. Now, since being home, I've had to do like everybody else, remind myself, it's okay if the Christmas tree does not get up by the end of Thanksgiving, you know, or it's okay if I take an entire week to put the Christmas decoration up. It's okay if every load of clothes didn't get washed on the day that I designate that I wash, you know, this is wash day or these are those things. I've had to give myself permission to just take it as it comes and let it be.
We all have to give ourselves, you know, that permission. One of the things from the pandemic you mentioned about being with family more, and a lot of us are living in, you know, multi-generational homes right now. Kids are home from college, parents are there, you know, grandparents are there. I love the stories that you share from your mom. You told a story about your mom growing up, and as a child, she and her siblings having to go out and poison the cotton. And it wasn't something that they could just spray and walk away from. They actually had to go to every plant, you know, and put a little substance on it. And she talked about her dad knowing, you know, each year that it was a different amount of poison, you know, different for each year that they might have to do it. But it was such a great story. Can you just tell us a little bit about your mom and some of her stories?
Well, my mom is a country girl, and my mom comes from the great generation. I saw it referred to as the silent generation, and that kind of bothered me a little bit. And I thought, well, this silent, I guess you could call it silent because they didn't complain. They were not complainers. They never thought that they were entitled to anything. I love that about them, and they are the toughest generation. I think they may be the toughest generation in modern history, for sure. My mother is a product of the Jim Crow South, having been born in Washington, Georgia, a little town not too far from Athens and Augusta. And, you know, they were, my mother is the 18th of 20 children. And my mother is, you know, so they, you know, it was an agrarian society. They had a big farm. They ate from their farm. They whatever little monies they made were from their farm, and they helped to take care of community with their farm. You know, I love to hear her talk about my grandmother in particular, how she would send them with little things, if it was butter that they had churned or milk that they had milked from the cow or a little bit of sugar cane or something that she would say to take to someone who had a lot of children and didn't have much or didn't have as much land as they had or had some misfortune on their farms. And she would always pack up a little something and send one of the kids to see about a neighbor. Now, you know, neighbors were not what we call neighbors. They didn't live. We couldn't see. We can see what each other has for breakfast in the morning. They lived miles apart. So because you're talking about being all this land. And, you know, they took care of one another. I love how she talked about they made their toys for Christmas. They did not go to the toy stores. Of course, my mother's a Black woman, so going to stores was not what people, white folks did that. Black folks didn't have those kinds of options in the Jim Crow South that you could just walk into every store. It did so happen that my mother's family, my mother's father was a country circuit preacher, Baptist preacher, and so he had a bit of prominence, and he was one to see about and stand up for people against, you know, the societal norms, which was white supremacy and Jim Crow, as I said. So they could go in stores, you know, with my grandparents or one child at a time, and they could transact business that way because of who they were. They were very mindful of their privilege. My mother had a business mind even as a child, so they would often send her. And I just think about, at 10 years old, she would go to town, walk miles to town to conduct business on behalf of her father, to pay a bill or to ask someone, a business owner, for something on credit for somebody in the community. And I often ask her, I said, you didn't worry so much about what would happen to you. She said, well, everybody knew Reverend Frank's children, and they knew that he was not one, white folks even knew he was not one to be messed with. And, you know, and she said, you know, people were typically didn't harm folk. We didn't, you weren't as fearful in that time as you are now from general crime. You know, you didn't worry about the kind of crime that we worry about in the sense. What they worried about mostly was abuse of, abuse by white people and more than anything. So she said, you know, she didn't really fear that. People sort of looked out for you. And certainly in the Black community, if they knew that, they sort of knew each other's patterns. And she said, if I was walking, if I got to a neighbor's farm, somebody was usually maybe on a porch or out in a yard, and they would look and see, and they had ways of sort of looking out for one another. And I love hearing those stories because they're constantly about community. My mother talks about how they had prayer meeting in their home because, of course, they didn't even have church every Sunday like we go to. You know, they had little churches that they built, and, you know, they were their own instruments. You probably had a church that may not have had a piano and may not have had an organ or some kind. So they may had their own instruments, maybe a tambourine. They, you know, she said you had, you know, floorboards in the church, so your foot padding kept the rhythm. And they sang, and they sang metered hymns, and someone would start with a hymn, and they were very much in the African tradition of call and response. And she talked about how they told stories in the family room, and you know, one of her sisters, because there were so many of them, would send back something to the country, and they might send back a record player, or they had an old Philco radio, or, you know, Phillips radio, or that kind of thing. And they listened to Joe Louis, you know, and his fights, and how they would cheer, what that meant for Black folks when he would run. And she would talk about how they always knew when Joe Louis fought that Black folks in town knew before the fight to go get whatever rations or whatever you needed, because if Joe Louis won, Black people were going to be in danger, so you didn't want to be out and about. You wanted to stay in your homes for a few days or on your farm or on your land for a few days to keep from encountering the kind of harm that might happen to you. But she said, you know, that they always, they looked out for each other. They made their own fun. They prayed and worshiped together in their own homes. you know, food was plentiful and it was enough to share with somebody. And even if you didn't, the notion, it was that you took care of your community. If there were simpler times in some ways, you know, certainly our simpler times for Black folks mean something very different for simpler times for the broader communities, you know. But, and she talks about how they could always find solace to go to, if they needed to, with the Jewish community, mm-hmm. because Jews and Black folks could identify with some of the same things. So in certain times, you would go to the Jewish merchants because you knew you would be safe there, and they kind of looked out. So those are the kind of stories that I love sitting here and listening to, and during this Christmas season where we've been in quite a bit and haven't been able to get out. She's been, you know, sort of talking and reminiscing about some of that.
I just really do love it when you share, and I hope that while people are all together, we can get some young people to ask, you know, their grandparents about their lives and about their times. As we get ready to turn about, you know, the new year, the future of our family, the future of our country, the January 5th election coming, Renee, would you mind taking us out with some music?
Not at all. I was thinking about, you know, what does it mean to go into a new year? And I think everybody in a season, I've certainly experienced, and I think so many, we have experienced in my family and with my friends, so many deaths, not only to COVID, but beloved teachers, beloved people. And, you know, you begin to think about mortality. So I'd just like to encourage everybody with this old song that from the Black, you know, church tradition. And it simply goes like this. Hold on just a little while longer. Hold on just a little while longer. Hold on just a little while longer. Everything is gonna be all right. Everything is gonna be all right. If we could tell each other that on a daily basis, our faith will increase. If we can pray for one another, offer a word of cheer to one another, call somebody and just let them know that you're thinking about them. If we could tell stories of our childhood or, you know, with parents and grandparents and intergenerational homes, if we could call somebody who lives by themselves and make sure that they're not overly lonely, that they have a voice to hear, if we can take time to listen, take time to observe. Watch out of your windows and watch the birds fly and look and see that they don't seem to have a care in this world and that they are provided for, and hope that our faith will inform us that the Lord will continue to provide for us. Thank God we've got some changes coming. We've got a little bit to be thankful for, those of us who operate by a spirit of hope. And let's be prayerful that the violence that we see, that, you know, stirring up, that those of us who have faith and goodwill, that if we put love first, love can conquer these things. Oh, it may be a tedious journey in doing so, but everything will be all right if we just hold on a little while longer.
Thank you so much, T. Renee Crutcher. Thank you for everything that you do.
You too. Thanks for having me.
The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is produced by Kiplin Primus, Jami Wellman, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. If you have comments about today's program or suggestions for future programs, you can leave a voicemail at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. You can listen to these interviews on demand at wclk.com or via the WCLK app. Thanks for listening.